Good afternoon. My name is Yvonne Crenshaw, a student in the oral history class in the School of Library and Information Science. Kim Schroeder is the instructor. I am interviewing Sergeant Carrie Glazier of the Wayne State Police Department for an oral history project for the Walter Reuther Library, Policing Detroit Oral History Project. Today is December 8th, 2014, and our location is in the Purdy Kresge Library, third floor, in the SLIS department. Sergeant Glazier, I would like to speak to you today about your career as a police officer. What motivated you to become a police officer? Many officers previously attended college majoring in criminal justice. Was that your path, or was there other things that led you to become a police officer?
My path was unique. It was sort of the cart before the horse. I grew up in West Bloomfield. I had inside since I was little, 4 or 5 years old, emulated and wanted to be a police officer. Even pretend to talk on the radio with my hand. And I never could get that out of my head. And so, but what I did was I thought, well, you know, I got to grow up, make a lot of money, and keep up with the Joneses, and after going that route, I realized that that not everybody in the Joneses aren't always happy. So I said to myself, I was in sales for a while, and I said to myself that I'd rather make $60,000-$70,000 and love my job than $120,000 and hate it. So I ended up going back to college, which was here. I majored in criminal justice and minored in psych. I then put myself through the police academy, was hired by the Pontiac Police Department, was there for about 6-7 years. There I worked as a patrolman, I was on the SWAT team. I also was a field training officer, which I trained new recruits. I was laid off and applying everywhere, and it was tough. It was real hard. I was divorced with 3 kids and paying child support. I got offered a job in Ferndale and at Wayne State, and I took Wayne State 8 years ago.
How did your decision to change fields and become a police officer affect your family and friends?
Well, my friends all knew, Carrie, you always were a cop. That's all you ever wanted to do. My family knew it too. So, everybody was supportive that they knew this was just something that I'd always put off and I've always wanted to do. So nobody was surprised, and nobody tried to persuade me to do anything else. And so it's been easy to go from selling a product to selling yourself. As long as you enjoy people and you like what you're doing, it's easy. You can sell yourself or sell brakes or buildings, it doesn't matter.
When you came to Wayne State, was there a probationary period?
Yes, you go through your field training officer program, which I did. Even though I was a field training officer myself and the director for the state of Michigan's Field Training Officers Association, you still have to go through and learn the rules and the ways of whatever department it is you're going to. So it was, I went through 3 to 4 months of training here, which was to learn the address, the area, the policies and procedures of Wayne State PD, and get familiar with everything down here. As far as officer safety and tactical stuff like that, you're always learning. You don't assume that you know everything, but the emphasis was to get me familiar with the policies and procedures here and the addresses of how to get around down here.
I'd like you to address how the Wayne State Police Department interacts with the Detroit Police Department. Is it part of the department?
They're separate departments. However, Wayne State Police Department, as being a separate entity with the Chief of Police, currently Chief Anthony Holt, we have captains, lieutenants, a detective bureau officers. We are also sworn as Detroit police officers, signed by whomever chief is in office at that particular time. So we have 2 identifications, which the Detroit ID gives us full power and authority within the city of Detroit.
Do you see any real difference in the execution of your duties with Wayne State Police versus when you were with the Pontiac Police Department?
Well, it was very different because when I was in Pontiac, Pontiac was like Detroit. Had no money, overwhelmed with calls. I remember in Pontiac, I had 50-some runs on my screen that was not dispatched yet, which was similar to what Detroit had always been struggling with. Wayne State ended up being kind of like Midtown Metro PD in a way that we patrolled the primary, Wayne State's campus, the students, staff, and faculty, always number one, and then the other secondary or buffer area that we also patrolled. But that has expanded. There's a big difference between Wayne State PD and where it came from, and as well as Detroit, although now Detroit's starting to really change and improve in a lot of ways.
What do you think you like most about your duties as a Wayne State police officer?
Make a friend today.
Yeah,
it used to be, you're taking a bad guy off the street, which it still is. But I realized later in my career, the whole chasing and running and fighting and stuff, although that's what my unit is specialized in, is what we do is hunt people and go after higher priority certain runs in the area rather than the uniform road going there. The CAT unit, Crime Abatement Team, which I am in charge of, we are a plainclothes, ideally a six-man unit, two that work days, two that work noons, and two that work late noons, 6 till 2 in the morning. Two officers were loaned out, so that would be 8, to the ATF task force. And one officer on my unit, so that would be 9, is loaned out and currently is loaned out to the FBI Violent Crimes Task Force. So ideally the unit's a 9-man, 9-person, because I do have 2 females on my unit, Crime Abatement Team.
And I think you said it was a 24-hour coverage?
Yeah, well, Wayne State Police does respond, and we are 24/7. We don't shut down. It's a full-service police department, and we take care of the Wayne State University's students, staff, faculty, residents in the area. So, no, we never shut down.
As a supervisor, what values do you think are most important to transmit to your officers?
The values, as far as this job is concerned and the officers, are you have to like people. I think before anything, before you even get hired as an officer anywhere, you're a social worker with a gun. If you don't like people, you shouldn't be in this business. They're calling you at a time where they've exhausted their friends and family, neighbors. There's no answer to their problem, but they want to vent. I don't think it's an officer's job to make somebody's life worse. And I think you need to be able to self-reflect and say, am I going to write this person a ticket for something that I did, but I got off because I was a cop? I didn't do it because I was a cop. I made a mistake. But when the officer found out I was in law enforcement, I didn't get a ticket. Do I really want to jam somebody up in a bad economy who made a mistake just like anybody else? So you should be able to self-reflect and understand people's needs. And I think going through life, in this position, this job, you're young when you get hired in, and you lack life experience. As you get older, some of the negative life experiences I've had gone through, like divorce or financial struggles, you can, when you're on a police run, so a lot of it stems from domestic, divorce, kids, money problems. You can identify with it, and you can help them feel less alone, help them, for the most part, not solve their problems, but I think they feel less alone when you can make them feel like, look, even the officer, when you take this uniform off, you got Carrie. I get the same stuff. I've gone through the same drama. But you have to be able to talk that way. And you have to be able to look at people that way. And people pick up on that. So that's something that you either have or you want to have. But I think that those are some of the necessary traits that you should have.
I've heard about the EPU, the Executive Protection Unit. Did you cover the recent presidential visit, or is that part of what you do?
Yes, part of the crime abatement team is when there's a visitor, whether it's from local, state, federal government, or anybody on campus that needs protection, the president of the university, any functions here, whatever my chief determines, we end up either just autonomously protecting them in case the president's going to speak. And they want us to blend in, not that there's a threat against him, but we'll be there in suits to in case anything happens. If the President of the United States comes in, we've worked with the Secret Service. When the governor comes, we've worked with the Michigan State Police and the State Department when other members of the federal government come in. So we do executive protection on our own or assist the agencies that are doing it.
Do you feel that the interagency cooperation that you've been involved with has affected Midtown or Wayne State's crime?
Yeah, Wayne State has affected Wayne State's crime. And we basically, for these, I don't know how many years that Detroit has been unable, not unwilling, but unable to get out from under themselves and respond to calls and hire new officers and turn around this budget deficit, we have had to pick up some of the cases and runs. And so in doing so, we have about a two-minute response time. Our numbers of officers on the road rival regular cities, suburbs. So we've had an impact on help turning around Midtown. And now DPD is you can see what's happening downtown, and the whole city is turning around financially, and you can tell in the police department that they're hiring more. I hear more runs that they're going to now that they normally wouldn't take or wouldn't be able to get to. So that's why I referred to Wayne State University Police as Midtown Metro PD, because the lofts and businesses and people moving here and deciding to move here, we're doing it because we were patrolling. They're calling us. So it was a good feeling.
You've really explained pretty well some things that have changed over the time period that you've been here. But have you noticed that the ethnic mist and the new institutions and the gentrification has really helped as far as lowering crime in any way? Or do you think it's made people more of a target?
You mean as far as the diversity down here?
Yes.
Being more diverse?
Yes.
No, I think actually the more diverse it is down here reflects the less crime you have. And people are willing to come down here and conduct business or live down here, which it is safe down here. But I have seen more businesses and residents pop up down here because things have been getting better, and they're continuously getting better, including outside of our area, where DPD is focused on. So I have seen that. Does that bring in more targets or victims? Well, the more people you have anywhere, then if there's that kind of element around, then I guess there's more potential victims. But I think the word is out. I know that where we lock up people and hunt down in the corridor, they always say state boys don't play. So, and they're right. We don't.
Has there been any change in the type of crimes? Or do you feel like the needs of the community has changed any way?
No, you know, the crimes they're cyclical, they go on everywhere. The crimes that you have here do go on in the suburbs. I had the equivalent of my professional grade sergeant from a suburb calling me and saying, "Kerry, you know, we got hit 17 times last week in B&E autos." Okay. Well, the suburbs are getting that. We use bait cars. We use different tools to tackle some of the problems that we have here, whether it's breaking and entering of cars, stealing of cars. They have that in the suburbs. Robberies, whether they're armed or unarmed, they're here. They have that in the suburbs. Things get magnified. I think the news grabs a hold of some things, what they choose to, and they let go of certain things that they choose not to. So you might have a single shooting here that goes on the news, and you might have a triple shooting that doesn't make the news, but they pick and choose that. Detroit's a good city with good citizens. I haven't seen anything change other than for the better. The citizens are great. You just have a small percentage, like anywhere, let's say 2% doing 80% of the crime. And I'm a believer, and I don't care if you're in the old Jeffries projects before they knocked them down, or the new Brewster homes. They're, you know, 98-99% of everybody who lives in there, they're good people. And you just have a small element that gives that a bad name.
So to your knowledge, if you have this information, does the Midtown area crime, as far as the type of crime or the amount, pretty much reflect any other university-type area in the country?
It reflects urban colleges. However, I think we're much lower in the way that we tackle crime. We use CompStat, where we look at the crimes that are occurring real-time, a crime feed that we actually can see as reports are processed, where these robberies or where these auto thefts or where property crimes are occurring. And then we can target them, which is what my unit does. It targets those. So we see where the trend is going. But no, I think that Midtown is similar to downtown, and the city is much larger, so you'll have more of some of the same things. But we are similar to, you know, like Temple University. You know, they're Philadelphia sworn officers, but they have their own department. They're in an urban area. I think our stats are lower. I think they're better than downtown. I think that they're copying and trying to implement some of the things that Chief Holt has done here for this department and this community downtown. And they are doing it, and you're seeing improvement.
Sergeant Glacier, what changes do you feel are needed to positively impact the community? And are there things that you've been able to implement that have affected that change?
Well, I mean, what I have been able to do is I've been able to gain the trust of citizens in communities that, as my chief said it, and he says it a lot, and I agree with him, a lot of people don't talk to the police, but they'll talk to Kerry. It starts off with who you are as a person and if you're in this for the right reasons. So, for example, if I'm in a community that's plagued by crime and I'm there on a radio run, which is true, when I was in uniform as a regular officer, I take my run, get my information, hopefully solve the problem, but then I would stay and I would kick it with my people there, and I would talk to grandma and my aunties and the kids, and they ended up knowing me and knowing me for who I am and not the badge, the gun. I got them to see, break me down as just a human being. And now, if I drive in there, hey, Kerry, you know, even unfortunately, I've locked up all these drug dealers and these criminals down on the south end. I'm on a first name basis with them. I don't befriend them in that way, but I don't harass them every single minute. And I have a ton of informants that tell me who's breaking into the cars in this area, who's robbing people in that area, because they trust I will never put them out on Front Street. And so some of the things that I use are just people skills. And it's very, very hard for a marked patrol car to roll up on a crime in progress. It's kind of like playing the lottery, okay? You're responding after somebody saw or somebody was a victim or witness to. Every so often, yeah, you know, you're vigilant and you see something happen. But or you're proactive and stop cars and stop people and you end up getting guns or drugs off the street. But most times, your car not only lets the citizens know where you are, but it lets the perps know where you are and when not to commit the crime. And as soon as my cruiser rolls off your block, that perp is in and out of your car faster than 15, 20 seconds, or got your wheels off faster than a NASCAR pit crew. It's when somebody has eyes on and is calling the police or calling me or texting me and letting me know what's going on is how you help stop some of the crime. And then beyond that, we lock them up. But the big problem right now I see, the biggest problem I see is that if I'm locking up John Smith over and over and over and over again to the point where we're on a first name basis, does that tell you that the problem is on the police end locking up, or maybe the adjudication part, keeping them locked up? They know they're not going to do any time, or they don't do any time, they're going to continuously come out there and do it. So I am locking up the same ones over and over and over again. So the problem is more with the adjudication part, whether it be the jails, not enough jail space, prison space, prosecutors. It's on that end because we're locking them up. Even DPD is always locking them up. They're just delayed because they've got a larger area to handle and not enough manpower. But, you know, hopefully that will change too.
Do you think that generally, not just Wayne State, mm-hmm. that policing is addressing the correct crimes to lock up? You know, a lot of times you hear about little petty stuff and
yeah.
it's like that's taking up jail space for someone who
yeah.
would really be a serious harm to the community.
And I would agree with that. That's my personally and professionally, I feel the same way. I happen to be on a unit that's flexible enough that we really only are looking for felons and dope and guns and not for the person who's, you know, suspended, who had a disorderly conduct warrant, and we're going to take them in and spend 2 hours of paperwork on something that we could be out there getting a gun off the street or narcotics that's being sold and showing our presence that way. So, yeah, I would agree that addressing some of the small crimes, and there's an argument that if you address the small crimes, the big ones won't pop out. I'm not saying that my way or my way of thinking is the right way. It's just my way. You know, there's an argument to stopping cars and writing traffic tickets, that you'll get more things out of the car. You'll enforce the traffic laws, make it safer. I agree. But there's also something to be said about targeting crimes and criminals that are on a larger scale. And I think our university police department does both. My unit tries to tackle the big stuff and the serious runs that are high priority. And then the uniform division does that as well, but they also take, we all handle local ordinances, misdemeanors, and felonies. But my unit primarily focuses on felons.
Are you the person that sets the goals for the Wayne State Police Department, you know, as far as what you want to accomplish, and mm-hmm. have you been able to accomplish some of those things?
No, the goals of the department are entirely addressed and directed by our chief, Anthony Holt, Tony Holt. And he's a great chief. He has people skills. And he understands the needs of the citizens. He has a good heart. So because he's in touch with people, he's able to focus his department, us, on certain areas where he is told we're having a problem. Or he's not disconnected from the community. He's very well connected. You'll see him at the coffee house. You'll see him at the cleaners. You'll see... So everybody talks to the chief. The chief talks to everybody else. He's a great person. So he's much much more connected to the community and what their needs are than a lot of other chiefs in busier jurisdictions or chiefs that aren't real people oriented.
If there's something that you think should change about the way policing occurs from training to execution, is it something you could point out and say, we need to train this better or do this better?
I offer advice, and we have a training sergeant who's in charge and a lieutenant and who's in charge of the field training officers program. And then our captain, and ultimately our chief makes the final decisions on things. So anybody can give their input, and I have done so. And if command thinks that it's in our best interest or the officer's best interest or the citizens or the staff and faculty's best interest, they certainly adopt it. They're open to suggestions.
Is there any one thing or more that you'd like to say, I think this could change or should change?
The only thing, the only issue that I have is really on the court side. I'm pretty content with how we police and what we're doing. I'm happy with that. And I like the way that Midtown is turning around and thriving. So I don't have any complaints on our end.
Well, you mentioned that you have two female police officers.
Yes.
Do you think that modern lifestyles are affecting the way police occurs? And I mean, everything from transsexual, transgender, homosexuality, and females in police. I mean, everything that is considered modern. Do you think that affects policing in any way?
Well, I hear that it does, but I haven't been upfront and personal with it. In my mind, it doesn't matter whether you're black or white, green, gay, heterosexual. If this is what the community is represented by, then your officers should represent your community. So it shouldn't matter, to be honest with you. I have two females on my day shift that are the most productive, two of the most productive officers in the entire department. I'll put them up. Sometimes I just stand back when they're questioning somebody who's trying to lie or get out of something, or they're trying to pry and get into something, and I just sit back and smile. They don't need my help. They do a real good job. So.
Back in the early 70s, when female officers first started coming on the department, they were trained side by side with the males, but then they were also shown techniques to use because they were smaller and physically not as powerful as men. Do they still do that?
Well, here's the reality. There's two things when it comes to females. No, clearly they may not be as strong, and they're not as strong as some males. However, you can make an argument that a perp will hesitate on hitting and striking a female officer, giving that officer more time for backup to arrive. Some females are stronger and able to physically handle a male. Depends on his size. But ultimately, on my own, I used to train and compete in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, grappling. I'm also a fight instructor, or they call it defensive tactics for my department. In Jiu-Jitsu, it's all about leverage, and it's all about technique. It has nothing to do with strength. That's why you'd see the small guys in the cage excelling and wonder, well, why? Well, why is this guy winning? Why is this guy making these guys tap out? Or submit, and it's because of technique, and it's because of leverage. If size mattered, elephants would be king of the jungle, and they're not. So, in jiu-jitsu, you would use leverage, you would use technique, and you would not use strength. So it shouldn't matter. I think personally, females can be more emotional than males, and I think that's a positive thing because I consider myself more emotional than most males. And I think when you're sensitive, it could be a good and a bad thing. But when you're sensitive, I think you can pretty much understand people easier than if you're closed-minded and closed off. So I think there's a need for women in law enforcement. I think there's a need for, like I said, it should mirror your community. So they don't get trained. They get trained techniques along the same lines as the men. A small guy will learn a technique that a female will learn. They learn the same things.
Some police departments require residency. Does Detroit or Wayne State Police require residency?
No, Detroit used to require it. Wayne State does not, and neither does Detroit any longer.
Well, I'm starting to wrap up now. Mm-hmm. You've been really great at giving a lot of information, but are there any other thoughts that you'd like to include in an interview? Is there something you're most proud of or something you'd like to share with us?
Well, I mean, what I'm most proud of is, I mean, I truly love what I do, and I love the citizens, and I meet new people, and quality over quantity. You know, I feel like I've known you, and you and I are looking at each other, and I think you know sincerity and passion. That's something that you people can pick up, and I'm a big believer in nonverbals, and when people want to talk to me, I want to see them. I want to see their eyes. I think that you can tell a lot by somebody's eyes. I'm proud of the fact that it's easy for me, because I like people, to get up in the morning and go to work because I don't have to change anything about me. This, the way I'm talking in this interview, is the way I am on the street. I'm not a bully. I don't have an ego. If you have an ego as a cop, you should check it at the door when you get into work. You gotta treat people with respect, period. So I do that. I have apologized to people under arrest in my car. You know, why? Just because I'm the police doesn't mean that I'm not wrong, or I didn't make a mistake, or it's a situation that went from bad to worse because maybe I'm having a bad day and this party's having a bad day, so I can't say, let's stop, back up, and hold on, my bad, I'm sorry. And they say, my God, a cop saying he's sorry? Yeah, why not? I'm not above that. And so it actually works the opposite. I don't think I'm above anybody else. Yes, the murderer, the rapist, the armed robber, am I above them? Yeah. But to the average citizen, and to the average citizen who's got warrants, misdemeanor warrants or public crime, you know, order, public order crimes? No, things happen. People have mental problems and they need help. Throwing them in jail isn't solving that problem. So I think you have to be able to understand people, but you can, in order to understand people, you need to understand yourself. And so if you understand yourself and you're open-minded and treat people how you'd want to be treated, then you'll have a good career. If you don't like people, you'll have a terrible career because you are in the problem solving, or at least attempting to, people business.
I believe that you really do understand the concept of protect and serve. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
I think I've pretty much covered, unless there's anything you want to ask me. I'm pretty much an open book.
I really appreciate you taking the time to allow this interview and to be part of the Policing in Detroit Oral History Project for the Walter Ruther Library. I would like to thank you.
You're welcome.